as he was locked in a battle of man versus nature. His whole body trembled from the strain as the pressure was transmitted from the skill into his body. A few zealots tried to take the opportunity to strike while Zack was occupied, but they found themselves turned into desiccated husks from a few spectral chains that hovered around Zack like sentinels. The meteor thankfully lost its momentum fast enough, and Zack pushed the fiery ball toward the largest clump of soldiers with a grunt, and it landed among them with a massive outburst of flames that rushed in every direction. The soldiers had desperately tried to erect some golden shields to stop the meteor as well, but they were nowhere near as powerful as Zack and his fractal bulwark. The shields had broken in an instant, and the cultists were either turned to paste or burned alive. Screams could be heard from every direction, and not even Zack was completely unscathed, even if he had managed to change the trajectory of the array. He had lost a large chunk of miasma to maintain the massive shield as it was pressed against the flaming meteor, and he was still beset by the waves of flames that instantly covered the entire cage after the impact. He also felt that the whole cage was being pushed toward its breaking point. The dome in the sky breaking had already damaged Profane Seal, and cracks now covered both the towers and gates of the skill. The only thing maintaining the skill right now was probably the infusion of energy from the 15 spectral chains. However, Zack didn't enjoy that kind of energy boost, as Fields of Despair was completely countered by the all-consuming flames. The miasmic haze hadn't been present at all during the battle, and he hadn't gotten even a smidgen of miasma from the large number of killed zealots. It was the first time he had met a perfect counter to so many of his skills in his undying bulwark form, and he felt it wasn't by chance that the Church of Everlasting Tao and the Undying Empire were such bitter enemies. Zack quickly readjusted his shield so that it shrank just to the point that it covered his body. It was just in time as well, as waves of fire and molten stone shot toward him. The heat was blistering, but it was somewhat manageable by circulating the fragment of the Bodhi through his body. His first instinct was to dispel the cage and regroup, perhaps even change back to his human form to gain some ranged capabilities to take out the bishop and the stragglers. However, Zack eventually decided against that course of action. Instead of fleeing from the scorching heat of the meteor, he ran toward it. The ground shuddered beneath his feet as he ran as quickly as his bulky transformation allowed, and he ignored the burning heat that was transmitted straight through his armor as he started scrambling up the burning meteor. The bishop was still floating in the air, the flames seemingly having no effect on him, and he started to rise even higher when he noticed Zack's approach. There should no doubt be a limit of how long an E-grade warrior could stay in the sky, but Zack wasn't willing to let the bishop run amok until he ran out of steam. He wanted to end things quickly, since his sister was waiting for him. But he was out of offensive treasures that could kill the flying man in one go. Hoisting himself into the air with the spectral chains had already failed spectacularly as well, so he could only move as quickly as he could until he reached the top of the meteor to use it as a springboard before it was too late. The bishop launched a storm of flames in his direction, but he simply punched through them as he jumped toward the lizard man in the sky. The meteor cracked beneath Zack's feet as he put everything into the hulking leap, and his arm was already swelling in size in preparation for the final strike. The bishop snorted and flexed his wings, but 10 spectral chains whipped at him from behind to push him down. It was the final hurrah of the spectral chains before Profane Seal was destroyed by the flames. 8 of the chains were incinerated as they tried to destroy the radiant sun that shielded the bishop, but the sacrifice released a dense storm of miasmic gases that allowed the final 2 chains to pass straight through the globe of fire unscathed. The bishop was forced to stop ascending to avoid the attack, which kept him in Zack's trajectory. The wings of the cultist suddenly covered his own body in an embrace, and Zack realized the man was using some sort of movement skill. However, that was just what Zack hoped for, and he swung his axe the moment he saw a burst of flames appear in front of him. The massive Barditch fell, cutting straight through a golden fractal and luxuriant armor. The large meteor lost most of its heat in an instant, and three thuds echoed out across the battlefield as Zack and the two bisected pieces of the bishop landed on the scorched ground. A large surge of energy entered his body, but he also felt a backlash as the miasmic cage finally broke apart. Zack would have thought that seeing their leader getting cut in two would douse the fighting spirit of the surviving zealots, but he had severely underestimated just how crazy these people were. Most of them started emitting extremely condensed fires from their mouths and eyes, and they heedlessly ran toward him as their bodies started swelling. Some fell onto the ground before they even got close to Zack, their bodies turning into bloated balloons before exploding into cascading flames. It reminded Zack of the man who had exploded when he saved Kenzie from the New World government at the border town. The whole area shuddered as dozens of eruptions went off, one after another, as the soldiers tried to bring Zack with them down to hell. The pitch-black armor from Vanguard of Undeath was already in a haggard state after climbing atop the meteor, and the blasts were quickly ripping apart the remaining layers. Zack blocked out the attacks he could with immutable bulwark, whereas the few remaining skeletons absorbed some of the attacks for him. Thankfully, the battlefield turned quiet soon enough, with just him and a few dying cultists remaining. His hair was singed clean off, and burns covered a large part of his body, but one of the two invading armies were dealt with, at least. The cultists hadn't even managed to harm him, apart from some surface burns, but they had been a surprisingly hard nut to crack. It looked like most, if not all, of the incursion restrictions were gone by this point. Normally, he would have wanted to sit down and go over the battle at this juncture, as it felt like he had gained a lot from the fight. But there was no time, and Zack turned back to his human form before he walked back through the burning wreckage toward Port Atwood's wall. He jumped up with a grunt, appearing next to the demon captain and a few Valkyries who had waited for his return. "I've dealt with the leader and the army, but be careful," Zack said as he cracked his neck. "There might be more hiding." Harvath slowly nodded as he looked out across the destruction outside the wall, mute disbelief apparent in his eyes. "Have you found anything about the array jamming?" Zack asked as he took out one of his healing pills to deal with the burns.
"I'm sorry. We didn't dare to leave the wall while you fought, in case we would become a liability. We'll start cleaning up the battlefield and looking for the array right away,"
Harvath said as he started awake. "That's fine," Zack nodded as he took out his new flying treasure, the large inscribed leaf.
"I'm heading inland. Be careful. Most of the cultists chose to blow themselves up, but perhaps there are reinforcements on the ship." "We'll be careful," Harvath nodded. "Don't worry, and let us deal with the aftermath."
Zack jumped on the treasure the next moment, and it soundlessly rose to the sky before it shot away with enough speed to rip the clouds in two. It felt a bit bad to leave Port Atwood while there were still enemies remaining. He had dealt with the army, but who knew what other things the cultists had planned? It was all too apparent just how far they were willing to go to take out their enemies, and he wouldn't be surprised if they had more nasty surprises in store for his island. However, there was only one of him, and he needed to prioritize where to strike for maximum effect. The speed of Zack's new flying treasure was just shocking, and he wasn't sure whether he would have been able to hang on if it weren't for the protective array that blocked out any wind. He didn't have any means to make an exact measurement, but he felt that the leaf would be able to keep up with a modern fighter jet. At least, it felt like he moved a lot faster compared to when he had flown in a commercial airplane before the integration. It wasn't all thanks to the high-quality craftsmanship of the vessel, though. He had actually noticed that he could infuse the leaf with the fragment of the Bodhi,
which boosted the treasure's speed by around 30%. He believed he could push the thing even further if he had some nature-attuned crystals to feed into the sockets, rather than normal E-grade Nexus crystals. It would normally have taken Zack hours to reach Ash Rotem by foot, even if he used Loamwalker to speed up, but he was closing in on the center of the island after just 15 minutes of travel. He was anxious to reach the demon stronghold, as he didn't want to repeat the tragedy of arriving just a few seconds too late again. Finally, he saw the battlefield ahead, or rather the massive clouds of miasma that covered a huge section of the northern parts of the island. The undead forces had no doubt set up a large array of unholy beacons to form such a vast cloud, but he frowned in confusion when he saw that there wasn't much of a battle raging. There was a hovering line of sentries protecting the whole flank of Ash Rotem, and there were over 100 craters on the ground outside, along with a few scorched bodies. It looked like there had been a few minor skirmishes that had been ended with laser beams by his sister, but the complete lack of damage to the town fortifications indicated that the undead army wasn't even straining itself to take over the town. However, the defenders were desperately launching attacks at an aquamarine shield from the walls of Ash Rotem, with dozens of projectiles hitting the barrier every second. It almost felt like the roles of invader and defender had been swapped. Zack guessed that something was brewing within the cloud of miasma that needed to be dealt with, and quickly, judging by the fervor of the attacks. He didn't even touch down inside the town to get a grasp on the situation, but he rather chose to fly straight toward the miasmic shield. Just when he was 100 meters from the shield, he pushed off while simultaneously stowing away the treasure. Tremendous amounts of cosmic energy swirled around him as he shot toward the shield, while Varun's bite drenched the area in a bloody hue. This time, he would be the meteor. Chapter 62. Fighting Fate. The air screamed around Zack as he shot toward the turquoise shield with the speed of an airplane, and even he got a bit worried he was playing a bit fast and loose with his life. However, he threw any hesitation into the back of his mind as he conjured a fractal blade that was as large as himself. He was perfectly capable of making it even larger, but he needed to contain the impact to a smaller area. The blade first changed color to a gleaming silver as he imbued it with the fragment of the axe, but the sanguine glow quickly spread from Varun's bite as well to cover the whole fractal edge. This was the most power he could release without utilizing Hatchet Man's rage or the slumbering remnants, and he could only pray that it was enough to punch a hole in the massive array. The world froze as Zack's attack cut into the shield with all the power he could muster, but an enormous shockwave that dispersed the clouds of miasma soon followed. Hairline cracks spread for hundreds of meters in each direction, and Zack managed to squeeze through the hole in the barrier before it healed. However, the point of impact was over 100 meters in the air, and he had no means to control his descent. The collision had also caused him to completely lose balance, and any hopes of a hero's entrance were dashed as he slammed into the ground face first. Another shockwave, this one a lot smaller, spread out from the point of impact, instantly killing the closest zombies. He scrambled back to his feet while wiping away some of the blood running from his nose, and he took stock of the situation. The insides of the array were shrouded by dense swirls of miasmic haze, and his skin crawled from the contact with the condensed death-attuned energies. The extremely limited sight made it impossible to see any clear threat to Port Atwood, and instantly getting mobbed by enraged elite zombies didn't make things easier to discern. Fractal blades shot out in each direction as swaths of destruction were carved into the undead hordes. However, these were the best of the zombies, and the fractal blades were whittled down before they reached too far. Each strike still killed over 50 zombies, but the blades broke apart from a storm of counter-strikes after that. Zack activated cosmic gaze in hopes of making anything out, but everything became a haze of varying degrees of gray. However, he did spot spots with more condensed energies, and he shot toward the closest target. A few seconds later, he found himself in front of an unholy beacon, and Zack wasn't surprised by the sight at all. What did make him frown in consternation, however, was the array surrounding it. There hadn't been anything like that around the beacons he had seen until now, and he guessed it was some sort of secondary array that was powered by the beacon. The beacon was guarded by a hulking corpse golem that swung at Zack the moment he appeared. However, Zack's physique was beyond monstrous by now, with an effective strength reaching 2,500. Zack countered the punch with his own, his fist not even a tenth the size of the massive undead construct. A thundering explosion echoed out as the arm of the golem blew apart from the force, and it was cut in two the next second as Zack slashed it with a lazy swing as he stepped toward the beacon. He couldn't make out its purpose, so Zack simply cut a few lines to ruin the inscriptions before he ripped the beacon out of the ground and stashed it in his spatial ring. Zack was a moving calamity as he moved from beacon to beacon at his utmost speed, and he had stolen 10 beacons in less than 3 minutes. Some of them had launched massive outbursts of death-attuned energies at him, but Zack had managed to dodge the waves of death with the help of Loamwalker. One of them had actually detonated just as he was about to stow it away, but the vibrant energies of the fragment of the Bodhi were able to neutralize the attack. He still hadn't spotted any leaders, so he could only keep going in hopes that they would be forced to show their hand sooner or later. A large shudder echoed out when he ripped another beacon out of the ground, and he saw that the shield finally flickered before it dissipated. It had been pretty smashed by his tremendous momentum when he'd launched himself at it, but it had soon healed itself after he pushed his way through. But now it looked like Zack had caused too much destruction within the shield, to the point that it could no longer maintain its functionality. The highly condensed miasma within the barrier started to spread out as well, but Zack knew that it would sooner or later be cleansed by the pure energies of the world. However, his confusion only grew while looking around, as visibility steadily grew better. He couldn't see any high-grade siege tools or anything else that would separate the thousands of zombies from normal elites. But he finally spotted a group of hooded beings in the back of the army, guarded by 5 hulking E-grade corpse golems. Zack immediately rushed toward them, carving a line of true death through the zombie horde. The hooded warriors didn't react to his approach, but the golems readied themselves for battle and started rushing toward him. However, these golems were only marginally stronger than those who had guarded the unholy beacons, and Zack needed less than a minute to turn them into small hills of rock-hard flesh. The hooded warriors had started fleeing, but he effortlessly captured one of them while blocking the escape of the others. It tried to struggle out of his grasp, but Zack was surprised to find that it was pitifully weak.
"What are you planning?"
Zack growled with anger as he ripped the hood from the lich's head. However, what met Zack's gaze wasn't the Lich King or one of his generals, but just some random revenant that couldn't have been higher than level 60. Zack crushed its neck in frustration before he captured the others, getting the same result. Just what was going on? It quickly became apparent that this was all a big diversion, and that the undead weren't actually interested in conquering Ashrodom. But what was the point of sacrificing their own without any gain? Was it to trick the Church of the Everlasting Tao? Or was the real mission taking place somewhere else? Zack's first thought was the mines, just like how Harvath had guessed. Were they trying to mess with his Nexus vein somehow? If the real leaders had entered the confusing mess of subterranean tunnels beneath the island, it would be extremely annoying to root them out, as his own force still hadn't completely mapped the nigh endless number of narrow passageways that ran beneath the surface. However, he suddenly saw someone running toward him,
decimating all the zombies that tried to impede her path with a barrage of attacks based on the four elements. Zack flashed over to Kenzie, who immediately threw herself in his arms. He really wanted to catch up and hear what had happened since he left, but he saw how frazzled she had looked as she ran toward him. Something was wrong.
"Are you okay?" Zack asked. "What's going on?"
"I am fine, but someone is tampering with the arrays in the valley since some time ago," Kenzie said with worry as she released him. "I stationed a few sentries on the mountain just in case, but I can't get a hold of them now with the jammers. I'm afraid they're up to something over there. I've been trying to head to the mountain, but the undead swarm anyone who leaves the town. We've tried breaking out, but their shields were too strong."
"I'll deal with it," Zack said as the leaf appeared again beneath his feet. "There are no elites here, it seems. I think this whole army is a diversion. I'll be back in a bit."
The next second, he was hundreds of meters away, speeding toward the secluded valley. Panic coursed through Zack's body as he infused the flying treasure with the fragment of the Bodhi. He had handed over control of the network of arrays he had erected around the island to his sister upon leaving, so he hadn't noticed anything wrong at all since arriving. His thoughts were a mess as he tried to figure out the purpose of whoever had breached the arrays. Were they looking for Alea, or did they have some other agenda? Was it because of the mutated Tree of Ascension? That thing would no doubt be of huge value for anyone dabbling with poison, perhaps even after having reached E-grade. However, there should be no way that the undead empire knew about it, as access to the valley had been completely restricted after Zack took control of the island. Besides, things wouldn't end well even if the invaders weren't there specifically for Alea. Would they simply let her rest in peace after seeing her next to the Tree of Ascension? Of course not. Zack and his sister had placed strong protective arrays around the whole valley to keep people away, but the invaders were either extremely strong or adept at breaking arrays. The inner shield protecting Alea's stasis array wasn't much stronger than the outer one, and Zack was doubtful that it would prove a challenge to whoever had encroached upon the valley. Less than 5 minutes had passed since he'd left the outskirts of Aj Rodam, but he felt like it had been hours when he finally breached the crest leading into the valley. He immediately noticed that there was something wrong with the outer array covering the whole valley like a dome. It was still intact, but it felt completely drained of energy, like it was just there for show. The leaf shot straight through it, and he was at the core of the valley in seconds. However, his fears were soon realized as he spotted four hooded individuals sitting in a circle around Alea's stasis array, right next to the Tree of Ascension. An intricate array covered the ground around the stasis array, and Zack sensed extremely pure fluctuations of death-attuned energies from the crystals powering it. Zack jumped down from the flying treasure and rushed forward like an enraged beast, his axe already shining with a sanguine glow. The air popped around him as his aura billowed out without restraints, and even the slumbering splinter stirred in his mind from Zack's towering fury.
"So, you are here,"
the closest man said with a hoarse voice, but he couldn't even finish his sentence before he was obliterated by a world-ending punch turning into scraps of flesh that rained down upon the area. The three others quickly rose from their seated position around the array and unleashed what looked like a swarm of jumbo mosquitoes at him. But Zack ignored them as he unleashed a Tao field based on his strongest Tao fragment. Many of the bugs died from the sharpness of the domain, but even more managed to resist as they assaulted every piece of exposed skin on his body. The spectral forest of Hatchetman's spirit rose from the ground, and an emerald shield protected Zack from the gnats as he cut through the swarm. The hooded warriors released another barrage of what seemed to be poisonous insects and airborne toxins, but everything was destroyed by Zack's furious assault. The second robed warrior was quickly cut into a dozen pieces from a furious barrage of swings, and the third was literally ripped apart the moment Zack caught him with his free hand.
Only one final warrior remained in just a couple of seconds, and Zack had him caught in an iron grip as he took ragged breaths due to barely restrained rage. He had gotten even angrier as he had seen the stasis array at close distance, as it had obviously been tampered with. The golden glass was replaced by a murky black sheen, and he couldn't even see Alea's body inside due to an extremely dense violet cloud within the glass. He couldn't even tell whether she was alive or dead while standing just a few meters away.
"Tell me, what have you done?"
he roared as he ripped off the hood of the man, exposing a man who looked like a corpse that had been left out in a desert for weeks.
"Fractured soul, not living, not dead,"
the man wheezed with a laugh.
"I was anointing her to become an elite of our empire, but now it's all for naught. You might as well put the girl out of her misery."
"Tell me how to fix this!"
Zack screamed into the man's face, his anger towering to an unprecedented degree.
"Death is the destination for all. You can't fight fate,"
the desiccated husk of a man laughed, and Zack's danger sense soon erupted, forcing him to throw the man away. The hooded lich exploded into an enormous cloud of gases that were no doubt extremely toxic. But a few wide swings with Varun's bite pushed the cloud north and toward the edge of the island. Zack only took a cursory glance at the surroundings before running over toward the glass array that had kept Alea's soul from crumbling any further. However, he stumbled after just a few steps, and his mind started to become cloudy. He quickly ate one of his best antidotes as he circulated the fragment of the coffin in an effort to refine the invisible toxins that must have made their way into his body. Helplessness threatened to immobilize him as he looked down at the array. He somewhat regretted not bringing his sister in his hurry to get here in time, but he instinctively knew there was nothing she could do in front of something like this. He ripped out the four crystals powering the array, and they were no doubt D-grade miasma crystals from the fluctuations. Extremely condensed streams of death-attuned energies tried to infect his body without him even trying to absorb anything, but his specialty core just trembled a bit as it absorbed the infiltration. Zack put the crystals into his pouch as he swung his axe a few times to ruin the intricate layout of inscriptions covering the ground, and the array instantly lost any remaining strength. The array was stopped, but his heart still hammered as he gripped the glass coffin cover to push it away. But before he even had a chance to move the lid, an invisible shockwave erupted from within, and his surroundings changed the next instant.
Chapter 63 Fragments.
"Get out!"
Ysera screeched, her eyes muddled and unfocused from the Hera leaves.
"You keep taking up time and money. What are you good for?"
Tears pooled in Alea's eyes, but she knew her mom was not herself at the moment.
"I'll be useful, I promise,"
Alea said as she shuffled out of their corner of the communal space, her eyes downcast to avoid the mean stares of the others. She quickly found herself on the streets, the two burly guards at the door only sparing her a glance as she vacantly stopped after a few meters. What should she do? Mama was not well, and they had no money. Alea already scrounged food outside most days, but the shopkeepers had started to become wise to her tricks. There was only one solution left. She needed to start working as well. The madam had said that she should wait a while longer, but Mom needed money now. So Alea tried to still her beating heart as she looked back and forth along the street to find a willing customer. She finally spotted a young man who seemed to have recently passed the age of adulthood. He wore mostly ragged clothes, just like most people in the slums, but there was something about him. There was an energy around him that made him feel the same way as the scary man who always followed the madam around. The energy of a cultivator. Besides, he looked very handsome, even if he had a lazy expression, and the dirt on his body seemed to be recently applied, compared to the ingrained filth some walked around with. He would no doubt have some coin to spare, and compared with most of the men who entered the tea house, this one seemed a lot better. She slowly walked up toward him before he had the chance to walk away, and quickly gathered her courage as she looked up at the man, who was over 2 heads taller than her.
Young master, how about having a cup of tea with me?
Alea stuttered as she desperately tried to mimic the ladies of the White Lotus Tea House. The young man with the lackadaisical expression looked down at her with surprise, and she tried to give off the innocent charm that Madame Sai said would be her best weapon for the next few years. However, Alea became uneasy when she realized that he didn't have that gleam in his eyes that was so easy to discern. The expression that meant that the man was no longer thinking with his brain. Was he too young to be interested in these kinds of things? Alea still wasn't sure how everything worked, but she was confident she had seen even younger men entering the private compartment in the tea house.
Why did you call me young master? Do you recognize me?
He said curiously as he walked closer.
No, Alea said, some fear taking hold of her heart.
Had she made a mistake and said something she shouldn't? Madame Sai always said that words were the most dangerous things, and one wrong word could cause a lifetime of suffering.
Then how did you know that I am rich? I am not wearing anything expensive, and both my face and my clothes are dirty, he said as he took another step closer. That, Alea said, looking back and forth, trying to figure out a way to get out of the situation.
She pleadingly looked at the 2 guards behind her, but they pointedly ignored her. Had they already realized that the young man was too dangerous to mess with?
I'll give you an E-grade Nexus crystal if you tell me, the young man said.
Alea's eyes widened in shock when she heard what he said. An E-grade Nexus crystal was a huge fortune. One auntie in the tea house had been tipped one once, and she had been able to eat her fill for over 1 year on that, even after having given the tea house their share. Could she make that much money by just answering a few questions? Her instincts said no. Things that seemed too good to be true always came with hidden dangers. More than one girl in the tea house had disappeared after being offered a handsome reward to visit a patron in their homes. Some believed they had found a better life, but Madame Sai said they were usually sold into slavery or even turned into some sort of materials for evil cultivators.
My patience is only so long, the young man said as he took out a shimmering crystal from nowhere and waved it in front of her.
Alea's heart started to beat rapidly, and she was unable to take her eyes off the mesmerizing crystal in his hand. She had never seen anything so beautiful, and it radiated amazing amounts of energy.
Your clothes look worn, but they are new. The wear doesn't seem natural. It is like you have rubbed the clothes against a stone to make it look worse than it is. It's the same with the face. It's dirty, but your skin is healthy and clear, she said, the words tumbling out of her mouth as quickly as she could form them.
I guess I overestimated my disguise, the youth wryly smiled as he threw her the crystal.
Alea's eyes lit up as she clutched the crystal, quickly placing it inside a hidden pocket within her dress. The youth looked at her with amusement for a second, before he seemingly had thought of something.
Here, hold this for a second, he said, handing her another crystal, though this one was a smoothly polished sphere that didn't emit the same beautiful colors.
Alea didn't dare to say no to the young master, so she gingerly gripped the ball, and she noticed that the young man's eyes lit up when it started to gleam with a mysterious purple shimmer.
Are you sure about this?
Agras asked with a serious expression.
What's there to think about?
Namis growled from the side as she glared at Alea.
The Lord has spent so much time and effort on this.
Why are you hesitating?
Namis, Agras sighed before he turned back to Alea. Alea looked down at the large vat with trepidation, knowing that she might never be able to leave once she entered the bubbling pool. The young lord didn't know this, but she had found out that there had been three before her. Three young women who had died while attempting this. Her knowledge about constitutions was shallow, but she had learned from the old master who had instructed the nine of them that the risk of dying was extremely high unless there was a great fit between you and the manual. And that risk only increased when you were dealing with deadly poison. But this was the path she had chosen. If she died, she would at least have died at the peak of beauty. Her thoughts went to her recent return to the White Lotus Tea House, the first visit in 6 years. Her mother, the beautiful goddess wrapped in the finest garments, was gone, replaced by a wretched hag. Her face had been pocked by scabs, and her skin sallow from overindulging on alcohol and Hera leaves. The lithe and graceful curves were gone, replaced by sagging skin and festering sores. Ysera hadn't cared where she had been. She hadn't even bothered looking for her after she left with Lord Ashrezak. Her mother had only demanded money or liquor after having seen the quality of the dress and jewelry she wore. Alea had turned away without another word, ignoring her mother's cries as her childhood crumbled around her.
"I'm ready," she said as she let her dress fall to the ground, showcasing her pristine body.
"Good," Agras said, trying his best to appear unperturbed by the scene as he handed her a shimmering beast crystal. "The main component of the medicinal bath comes from a swamp creature named Air Harkath Marshwalker. They are known for their ability to store all kinds of poisons in their body without harming themselves. Try your best to fuse with this thing as quickly as possible."
Alea nodded, and after one deep breath, swallowed the crystal whole as she stepped into the pool. This would be either the first step on the path of cultivation, or the last day of her life.
"Is that him?"
Ilvir whispered with incredulity as he gazed at the human in the distance.
"I can't believe that guy toppled the Ashrezak clan single-handedly, while wearing ladies' garments." "Progenitor. Odd advantages," Yanos muttered.
"Why is he even alive?" Namis growled. "He's a threat to our lord, especially now that he's doubly weakened. Alea, shouldn't you do something?"
Alea's mouth curved upward as she looked at the man, trying to imagine the scene that Lord Agras had described. One human dressed in Vesarith's dress and drenched in blood, running around causing havoc. It somehow felt like the world had just turned a bit more interesting.
"Lord Ashrezak hasn't told us to do anything, so why should I?"
Alea smiled as she stood up and adjusted her dress.
"What are you doing?"
Namis wheezed as she saw Alea skip toward the human.
"Are you heading to the mines again?" Alea said with a smile as she walked next to Zack.
"Yeah," he said, looking a bit perturbed.
"Why don't I join you?" Alea said, snaking her arm around his.
"I have a lot to do," Zack sighed, helplessness evident in his eyes. It was a refreshing difference compared to those meathead warriors at the compound she had trained with, a bunch of men with overblown egos and rampant aggression. This guy was the strongest warrior on the island, but he didn't even know what to do with himself when she teased him. It was both intriguing and a bit frustrating.
"I know. Learn about the ruthless heavens," she said, pushing her breasts toward his arm, the response leaving nothing wanting. "I know. I know all that basic stuff as well. I can teach you just as well as Alan can. And wouldn't it be nicer with just the two of us?"
Her heart hammered in her chest as she hurried away from the gazebo, and she immediately jumped onto the teleporter, taking her to Ashrodom. Just what had she done? This had been the perfect opportunity, but she had ruined it all by poisoning him because of that stupid impulse. She regretted stepping into that bath for the first time since gaining this odd constitution. For the first time, the gains didn't seem to match up to the costs. Of course, a larger part of her knew that absorbing the essence of the swamp monster was the only reason she had been able to save Lord Atwood at all during the final beast wave. Without it, she would just have been another bystander. She walked up to the secluded rooftop garden in her mansion and lay down on the recliner, her eyes absent-mindedly looking up at the stars. The blue sky that once had felt so cold and glaring felt soothing for the first time since arriving to this odd world. He was drifting away. The sturdy back kept growing, now towering like a mountain in front of her. It was this cursed situation that pushed him toward the heavens themselves. It should be a joy seeing the man she loved growing stronger, but she couldn't help but feel pangs of loneliness as the two drifted further and further apart. She simply couldn't keep up. No one on Earth could. Zack was leaving again soon, this time for the underworld, and a changed man would no doubt return. She had somewhat managed to improve their situation after her mistakes, and there was no longer that thinly veiled disappointment in his eyes when he looked at her. But that didn't change the reality they found themselves in. He was Lord Atwood, the de facto leader of a world, and perhaps even a future elite who would make his name known in the whole sector. She was just Alea, a prostitute's daughter who hadn't even earned the right to take a last name. She had thought that becoming a cultivator would change her fate, but she was still that same dirty child from the slums, looking up at the gods soaring through the skies toward their faraway palaces. How long would it be until they looked at each other like strangers? Zack was inundated in one vision after another, snippets of Alea's life flashing past him. He had a vague understanding of what was going on, and the knowledge was terrifying. Alea's soul was rapidly falling apart, and fragments of her soul released the visions for him. He didn't know how this was possible, as it had never happened with all the people he had killed until now. But one thing was certain. Alea was not long for this world if this kept on. Suddenly, another shudder emerged from the coffin, but this time, Alea's voice, rather than another vision, entered his mind.
"I am not ready. I want to follow you."
Chapter 64. Desperate Times. Zack's mind was already thrown into disarray after witnessing one snippet after another of Alea's life pass by his eyes. The storm in his heart only grew stronger after hearing her plea. His thoughts churned as he desperately tried to figure out a way to salvage the situation. Once he was back in his own body again, he immediately lifted the casket, only to be met by a horrifying sight. Alea's body had been turned completely black, and dense waves of corruption and death radiated from her body. Gases leaked out of her pores as well, and Zack was forced to quickly close the lid again, as the noxious fumes almost made him keel over after a single breath. That scene alone made him furious enough to almost spontaneously combust, but he restrained his anger as he searched for a solution. However, there were simply no treasures in his possession that would allow him to save her life. Her soul was falling apart, and her body was no longer fit for a living being as far as he could tell. But her last words echoed through his mind, and he refused to give up as long as there was a chance that he could save her. His first idea was to turn her into a revenant somehow, as that would at least allow her to keep living, in a sense. However, not only would that erase Alea and create a new personality, but it might turn her into a subordinate of the Lich King. It was those rogued liches who had initiated the process, which might have left some sort of mark. Also, he had no idea how to actually turn someone into a revenant.
"Follow me," Zack muttered as he stared down at the crystalline casket, and in his desperation, he suddenly thought of something.
He didn't have any idea whether what he did was insane or not, but when the idea was born, it refused to leave. So Zack took out an object and placed it on top of the lid. It was the Divine Investiture Array. This was the only solution available to him. Her soul was already a problem that was out of his league after having lost the Prajna Cherry, and with the Lich messing up her body, she was way beyond his means of salvation. He wasn't even sure whether a D-grade healer would be able to bring her back from the brink of death, let alone his paltry E-grade pills. But what if she became a tool spirit, a being that was essentially immortal? He had recently learned about two pieces of key information. First, living beings could be turned into spirit tools, or rather, sword slaves, through sacrificial rituals. Second, the Divine Investiture Array could pretty much turn anything into a spirit tool. If he turned Alea into a tool spirit, she would be able to live on just like Brasla. It was obviously a messed up solution, but one that would fulfill her wish and keep her alive. The universe was full of magical things that he couldn't even imagine, and perhaps he would be able to turn her back into a living being again in the future. He decisively infused a stream of cosmic energy into the Divine Investiture Array before he could change his mind. A massive pillar of gold shot down from the heavens and slammed into the valley with enough force to completely obliterate all clouds for tens of kilometers in each direction. A groundswell of energy rose from the depths of the mountain to meet the golden pillar, and Zack found himself submerged in a surge of power so dense that it was almost a liquid. He did not doubt that he would be able to gain multiple levels in minutes from staying in a magical place like this upon reaching E-grade, but that wasn't why he had summoned these energies. He suddenly felt a spiritual nudge from beneath the lid, and Zack refocused on the coffin Alea lay inside. His eyes lit up in excitement upon sensing it. Zack couldn't be sure, but he felt it was in agreement to his plan. Perhaps she could understand what was going to happen after being in the middle of it. However, nothing happened with the casket, and the energies simply seemed to swirl around it as Zack felt the spiritual signal from within weaken. Zack's mind spun for solutions, trying to figure out what the problem was. Was the array not enough? Zack emptied his spatial ring of anything that might help with her situation, and a stream of golden energy emerged from the Divine Investiture Array and snatched a third of his soul crystals before starting to go over the other things he had taken out. Zack didn't mind in the least, as he suddenly felt Alea's presence once more from within the coffin, making it seem as though the soul crystals had condensed her soul again. The next thing to be selected by the golden tendrils was the fossilized bug that radiated an unceasing aura of corrosion. Zack had picked it up on the third floor of the tower, but he believed that it was a lucky find, as neither Agras nor Galau had been able to even get close due to the aura it emitted. He thought it might fit with Alea and her constitution, so he took it out as well. However, it wasn't enough, and he felt Alea's spirit slowly weaken again. Panic welled up once more, and he gritted his teeth and took out an intricately inscribed jade box and opened its lid. The tendrils of light pounced on the contents with a palpable desire, and Zack wasn't surprised, considering what the box contained. The Pathfinder Oracle Eye. The auctioneer had said that it was perfect to improve a spirit tool's spirituality, and it might just be what was needed. The cost was pretty shocking, but he had already gone so far as to expend his Divine Investiture Array. It was too late to hold back. Zack's eyes suddenly widened in alarm as another tendril reached out behind Zack and picked up Everlasting, which he had poured out of his spatial ring along with the rest of his treasures.
Zack was about to take the shield back, but he stopped himself after some hesitation and let the golden light use the E-grade defensive treasure as another ingredient. It wasn't even a spirit tool, and he could always get another shield elsewhere. The tendril also reached behind him and ripped off a few of the largest branches of the Tree of Ascension, while a storm of gases was dragged out from the underground where the Amanita mushroom resided. Only then did the array seem satiated, and the tendrils receded back into the crystal as a golden cocoon formed around the stasis array.
"Thank you,"
a silent whisper suddenly echoed out in his mind, but its volume grew lower and lower toward the end, as though Aleia were moving away from him.
"Are you okay?"
Zack asked, but a sinking feeling spread through his chest as there was no answer.
"Aleia?"
The silence stretched on, and Zack started to panic as he couldn't get an answer from Aleia no matter what he did. He wanted to go closer, but he was instantly rebuffed by the powerful force from the divine investiture array. Zack could only anxiously wait for the light to dissipate. Time passed as more and more energy was infused into the cocoon, but Zack didn't move a muscle. He knew there were no doubt a dozen things that needed to be done on the island, but he refused to leave until he had seen this thing through. Only 2 hours later did the lights finally dissipate as the cocoon cracked, revealing the item within. The large crystal Aleia was recuperating inside was gone, as was his shield and all the materials he had poured into the array. In their place was only one thing, a massive black coffin. The coffin was just over 2 meters long and seemed to be crafted from a mix of the wood from the Tree of Ascension and some black crystal or smooth stone. The two materials formed intricate patterns all across the surface, though they didn't seem to be fractals as far as he could tell. They were more akin to the markings of the stone steel he had seen in the vision, though they obviously didn't contain that kind of power. The coffin's shape was traditional, with the top being slightly wider before narrowing again toward the bottom. It looked nothing like the translucent glass studded with divine crystals of before, but rather a rugged and completely opaque box that carried a heavy and almost solemn aura. There were two sets of fractals covering the lid as well. First was a circle placed at the wider section toward the top, and the other set was two lines of inscriptions that ran parallel along the length of the lid. The fractals almost reminded Zack of a funeral wreath with two ribbons hanging down. Finally, there were thick, pitch-black chains that were wound around the whole coffin a few times, and Zack was surprised when he realized they actually emerged from holes in the side of the coffin. A quick estimate told Zack there were over 5 meters of links wound around the ominous item, and there were perhaps even more chains waiting inside the coffin itself. All in all, it felt like an extremely somber item, and Zack was pretty shocked at how it had turned out. He wasn't sure what he had expected the divine investiture array to do, but at least it wasn't something as drastic as this. It had completely repurposed the items he had thrown inside in just 2 hours, a feat that would no doubt be utterly impossible even for great artisans like the original Brasla. But the amazing craftsmanship wasn't really what Zack was interested in right now. He hurried over to the coffin and tried to open the lid, but no matter how hard he strained, he was utterly incapable of moving it even an inch. He growled in frustration as veins bulged across his arms, but he could eventually only give up. He tried peering into the 6 holes the chains emerged from on the sides, but there was nothing but darkness inside the coffin. Zack tried shining a light inside with an illumination crystal, but it was as though the light was swallowed the moment it entered. Zack sat back with a blank look, his determination slowly being swapped out by confusion and depression. Just what had he done? Making spirit tools from living cultivators wasn't just considered an unorthodox method, but a downright evil one, He felt like a mad scientist playing God, and he had no idea what would come of this.
"What have you done?"
a furious voice said from the side, and Zack looked over to see Agros walk over with bloodshot eyes, his eyes darting between the coffin and Zack.
"She said she wasn't ready to leave, that she wanted to follow me," Zack mumbled with a hollow voice. "Her soul was falling apart because of those damn liches. She wasn't ready to let go, and this was the only solution I could think of."
The demon stared at Zack for a few seconds, while Zack simply looked at the coffin with a lost expression.
"So, what is this?" Agros finally said as he looked at the coffin. "Exactly what did you do? I can't sense her presence any longer." "I got something called a divine investiture array from the 8th floor. It could turn anything into a spirit tool. I also added the Pathfinder Oracle Eye, and it seems the process swallowed my shield along with a bunch of the treasures I have gathered so far," Zack explained. This is not right," Agros said with disgust on his face. "It goes against the natural order. How will her soul find rest or enter the cycle of the heavens this way? You have cursed her."
Zack could say nothing in response, bleakness washing over him as he felt some disgust with himself. The silence stretched on with one man brooding and the other man stewing.
"You threw a shield worth over $1 billion into this, and it was one of the cheaper materials?" Agros finally said with a grimace. "The things you expended here would be able to pay for the foundation of a great faction." "I figured that if I could turn her into a spirit tool like Brazla, she would be able to stay alive. We could find a way to turn her back into flesh and bone in the future."
Zack sighed as he looked up from the coffin.
"Do you know if it's possible?"
"No idea," Agros said. "Anyway, we can't stay here."
"What's going on?" Zack asked.
"We're being invaded, remember?" Agros snorted. "There are still enemies to deal with even after your rampage. We need to clear them out so we don't leave any hidden threats. Besides, we are running out of time to deal with the unliving. Your sister may have bought us some time, but we're still cutting it close."
Zack nodded before he walked over to the coffin. He silently looked at the beautifully crafted surface and the chains that kept the thing sealed before he slowly reached down to put it in his spatial ring. But the coffin suddenly shuddered and started shrinking as the chains moved about. In just a second, the coffin had shrunk to just half a decimeter's length, and one of its chains had formed a loop through the top holes of the coffin. Zack realized what was going on, and he didn't hesitate to put the chain over his head to wear it as a necklace. The moment the coffin touched his chest, a weak tendril emerged from the treasure, but there was no voice accompanying it this time. It still gave some comfort to Zack, and he desperately clung to the idea that Aleia was still inside there, but that she was simply too drained to communicate at the moment. Chapter 65. The Next Step. Confusion and guilt plagued Zack's conscience about what he had just done to Aleia, but the deed was done, and he couldn't stay in this secluded valley and second-guess himself forever. The two jumped onto Zack's flying treasure, setting off toward Ashrodom. As they flew, he got an update of the situation from the demon. Agros had returned 30 minutes ago, at which point order was mostly restored to the island. The Valkyries had discovered the jamming array that blocked out any communication and teleportation on the island and deactivated it somehow. They were still locked out from the rest of the world, but Kenzie and the other experts were working on multiple solutions while multiple squads had set sail to look for hints of similar arrays. Even the creators were furiously producing new vessels to replace the destroyed ones, and they had already delivered 3 Kareks in record speed. They reached Aj Rodam soon enough, and Zack was relieved to see that the miasmic clouds were mostly dispelled by this point. He saw hundreds of warriors walking through the forest in groups, likely looking for stragglers who had wandered off from the rest of the zombies. An inquiry told him that his sister and the demon generals had already returned to Port Atwood, and they'd taken the teleporter back as well. The scene in Port Atwood was pretty similar to the one in Aj Rodam. The raging flames had been doused by now, but much of the southern edge of the island had been completely ruined by the wildfires. Thankfully, they sat right on top of a nexus vein, and the dense energies would restore the greenery in a year or two. The two walked over to the battlefield, where the bodies of the fallen cultists were still being examined for lingering threats. The few who survived Zack's onslaught had either tried to go out in a blaze of glory, or were summarily executed by one of the demon armies. Zack didn't care about that, as there was no middle ground with these two forces. He saw his sister standing at the edge of the battlefield as a dozen drones roved back and forth across the area. It was the same ones who had stood sentry around the technocrat incursion, and Zack guessed she was looking for any survivors who tried to play dead. The demon generals were nowhere to be seen, though, perhaps occupied elsewhere. Of course, her search was a bit redundant, considering that demon warriors and a few nauseated humans were cutting the heads off every corpse just in case. It was both to kill the stragglers and to prevent any corpses from rising again. Their approach was quickly noticed, and Kenzie ran over with worry written on her face.
"What happened? Is Alea okay?" she asked the moment they appeared.
"It's complicated," Zack sighed. "We'll talk about it later. How are things here? How were the losses?"
"Around 200 people died from the invasion, almost all of them during the battles at sea before they reached our island," Kenzie said. "We mostly stayed within the arrays after they arrived, though, so very few people were hurt."
Zack closed his eyes as he took a deep breath. Another 200 people dead, and that was probably just a drop in the bucket compared to the losses on the main continent. But he couldn't do anything about it, and he slowly opened his eyes and indicated for his sister to continue.
"The threat was essentially over after you arrived. We're mostly cleaning up and rebuilding by this point. We've also figured out a means of communication, old-school radio signals. A few engineers and the Ishiate tinkerers have managed to strengthen the signals of old machines to the point we can communicate pretty great distances. But it's only in Morse code."
"That's good," Zack nodded. "Do the ships you've sent out have these things?"
"They do. And we've actually found the missing cultist ship already, thanks to Mr. Trang's companion. It is sailing away from us, toward Mystic Island, I think."
Kenzie sighed.
"We have sent over half of our remaining ships to harass it, but it will take a few days to catch up. Ilvir is leading those ships."
"I'll deal with it," Zack said with a frown, preparing to take out his flying treasure again.
"Just let it be," Agras said from the side. "Our time is limited, and we can deal with the stragglers another day. It should take them a few days to reach that island, perhaps over a week if they're constantly under harassment. We already have elites stationed there, and they can just jump into the Mystic Realm and close the spatial tunnel, allowing us to reclaim the island at a later date."
Letting the invaders have free rein in his archipelago went against every fiber in his body. But he knew that he didn't have much of a choice, as there were bigger fish to fry.
"How long do we have until the realignment array activates?" Zack asked.
"We broke a couple of key pillars before we had to stop," Kenzie answered. "I can't be sure, but we think it will take around 6 or 7 days to complete, unless something changed in the last day. But the sooner it stopped, the better. It's draining our planet. Who knows what long-term effect that might have?"
"What about the arrays blocking our teleportation array?" Zack asked. "I heard you were working on some sort of solution."
"We haven't located any more arrays, apart from the one on this island,"
Kenzie said with some helplessness. So we are still locked out from the main continent. Worst case, you can try flying over to Cogstown and use their teleporter. It's possible it hasn't been impacted by the spatial disruption.
That will cost us a few days, though, Agros interjected. And we don't know the situation on the mainland.
Kalren and I have looked into these types of arrays since what happened to Alea and the army, Kenzie said. I figured they might block out all the teleporters around the dead zone after they activated the realignment array. They found a simpler solution by just blocking this island, but I do have something that might work.
You do? Zack asked with surprise.
Blocking arrays is a standard tactic during conflicts in the multiverse, Agros added from the side. It's almost impossible to catch your targets if they just keep teleporting away. Just look at the insectoids and their war. They have tried to catch the followers of the old Redeemer for months, but they just keep teleporting away from any compromised hive.
So there are solutions? Zack asked.
It boils down to whether your or your opponent's methods are better, and that's why I'm not sure, Kenzie explained. We managed to get our hands on a spatial reinforcement array, and it should technically be able to stabilize the subspace, or whatever, long enough for you to teleport to the main continent.
That's great, Zack exclaimed, a weight lifted from his shoulders.
Well, it's just that we're dealing with two ancient factions. Their jamming arrays are probably pretty strong. I'm not sure what would happen if our array breaks apart before your jump is completed. You might be thrown out in the middle of the ocean, or you might be torn to pieces by spatial rifts.
Oh, Zack muttered. So it's either waste a day or two getting to Cogstown in hopes that their teleporter still works, or risk getting ripped apart?
Pretty much, Kenzie said with a weak smile. Just teleport, Agros shrugged from the side. With your luck, you'll be just thrown out right in front of the Lich King, even if the array breaks.
Zack only snorted in response before he turned back to his sister. Can I do anything to help with the spatial array thing? Zack asked. I've gathered all kinds of items during my climb.
I don't think so, Kenzie said. Some treasures might be able to make the array stronger, but I don't know how to do that.
That's fine. Where are Thea and Billy? Zack asked. I heard they helped out while I was gone. Oh, and where are the Tal Eladar? I haven't seen a single one since returning.
Billy and Thea are recuperating in a mansion next to the hospital, Kenzie said before her face scrunched up. As for the Tal Eladar,
they didn't come, the demon snorted.
I told you that you can't rely on those wily beast tamers.
Is that true? Zack asked with a frown as he looked over at his sister, and her face told him everything he needed to know.
We sent a distress call, but they delayed and delayed until our teleportation array was blocked out,
Kenzie said with some anger.
Zack knew that the Tal Eladar had just stayed behind as business partners, but he was still pretty angry that they simply chose to cower to the side when their ally was being attacked like this. This was the second time Verana had refused to get involved with the conflicts on Earth, and it had become abundantly clear that they couldn't be relied upon for anything important.
Well, I'm sure they'll regret their choice sooner or later, Zack finally said after a short silence, which elicited a knowing snort from Agros.
So, what happened in the Tower of Eternity? Kenzie asked with some worry. Agros said that you caused a mess, but things turned out mostly fine?
Zack glared at the demon, who just grinned back at him. Well, I got a pretty good result and made some allies, but I might have also made some enemies as well. I had to suddenly leave due to getting a prompt about Port Atwood being invaded, so I don't know about the fallout, Zack said as he took out the Heaven's Secrets array. More importantly, can you install this thing on my Nexus node later when you have the time?
It can help with my evolution.
Oh? Kenzie said with interest as she looked down at the array. It shouldn't take too long. I'll go deal with it right now. I'm done here anyway.
Zack nodded before he left his sister to visit his two friends, with two Valkyries accompanying him to catch him up to speed as they walked. They reached the mansion soon enough, where the guards wordlessly let him in with a bow. He indicated for the Valkyries to stay outside as he entered, and he quickly spotted where the two were recuperating with the help of cosmic gaze. A few quick steps brought him to a large bedroom on the second floor, and he entered after softly knocking on the door.
You're back, Thea said with a weak voice from her bed facing a window, looking out at a beautiful garden. Your intelligence was incorrect. They made their move early.
I heard, Zack sighed as he sat down next to her bedside.
He was inwardly relieved, though, that Thea seemed fine, with all her limbs intact. He did spot a wound on her stomach that was lit up with miasmic energies, though, but it didn't look as bad as the one he got himself from Mal, and it should heal up as long as she slowly ground down the lingering Tao with her own.
I'm sorry, Zack said. And thank you for helping my people while I was away. Who knows how many would have died if you weren't there.
So, have you dealt with everything? Thea said as she turned to look at Zack, her piercing blue eyes staring evenly into his.
Zack was silent for a few seconds, thinking it over. There was honestly more he could do to improve his current power while still in F-grade, a lot of untapped potential, as Cathaya would call it. But more importantly than that, there was a burning desire that was eating him alive. There had been a desire smoldering in his chest since the events in the valley, the desire to unleash an unprecedented level of vengeance upon the so-called Lich King for what he or his subjects had done to his island and Alea. Zack's face was without expression, but a fire burned in his eyes as he looked down at Thea.
I am evolving right now, and heading toward the core of the dead zone the moment it's completed, Zack said,
and he felt a momentum building in his body the moment he